Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind with Jessica Burtis, Pamela Sue Mann, Jenny Bill, Kathy Manzo, Alex Lefchuk, and more, sharing lessons from the creatives of yesteryear for the population of today.
It was on the planet Skaro that my old enemy, the Master, was finally put on trial. They say he listened calmly as his list of evil crimes was read, and sentence passed. Then he made his last, and I thought somewhat curious, request. He demanded that I, the Doctor, a rival Time Lord, should take his remains back to our home planet, Gallifrey. It was a request they should never have granted.
I must find the Doctor. This body won't last long. I need the Doctor's body.
This is a Type 40 TARDIS, able to take you to any planet in the universe, to any date in that planet's existence.
Who are you?
I was dead too long this time. The anesthetic almost destroyed the regenerative process. Don't you see? I have 13 lives.
Oh my God. You have two hearts.
The Doctors have you.
No way.
This way.
Give me some time.
I'm half human. I'm another side.
I thought you were a doctor!
I thought you were a doctor!
I'm in malfunction.
By midnight, tonight, this planet will be pulled inside out.
I'm calling an ambulance to take you back to psychiatric, from which you've obviously escaped.
The Eye of Harmony is open. If I don't close it, get my TARDIS and the Master off this planet. This planet will no longer exist!
This is his last chance to stay alive, and you know it!
What do you know of last chances?
More than you!
Don't panic! Everything is under control!
I know who I am! I am the Doctor!
Critical timing malfunction, instigate automatic emergency landing, and what really happened in San Francisco on December the 31st, 1999. All part of the latest edition of Resonance Rewind. Unbelievable. Over a quarter of a century since Doctor Who, the movie, actually thrilled, and I say that again, thrilled British audiences and led us wanting more from the awesomeness that is Matthew Jacobs, who in fact joins us for today's Residence Rewind package. Matthew, it's a delight to welcome you to the show as, of course, the writer and indeed co-producer in many ways of Doctor Who, the movie. I mean, as we look back, and obviously this year, we are also blessed with the notion of Doctor Who Am I, a documentary made by yourself and, of course, a fabulous co-producer as well, which we'll be talking about at another time, on a later date. But it's good to have you back, and welcome to your first Residence Rewind.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me today. It's a pleasure. Well,
it's great. And of course, you're connecting from, I believe, California, which is, of course, the wonderful North America. So let's go straight to Pamela Sue Mann, our ace musician, based, of course, in New York. Pamela, keen Doctor Who fan, I can't believe that you weren't familiar with the Paul McGann incarnation of Doctor Who, the movie. Have you managed to put that right now?
I have. Thank you, Jenny. Thank you, everyone. I mean, it has been quite the battle, but I did find actually Jenny sent me the link, to be honest. So I saw the movie not long before I am appearing on you. Right.
So you've just seen it. Great.
Yeah, I just seen it. Wait, so Matthew, do you have something to do with this film?
Oh, he wrote it, Pamela. He only wrote it. So
yeah, I wrote it.
Fairly critical sort of aspect there. Pamela,
that's right.
before we break any other bombshells.
That's a worrying phrase. Did you have something to do with this film?
Honestly, it was so frantic, my trying to get the movie and then actually watching the movie and then making it in time for this, that I didn't get to do the usual immense research that I usually do.
Okay.
No, I feel like an idiot, and I think I'm just going to say goodbye.
Pamela, share with us your thoughts on what you've just seen.
Well, I realize I am a massive fan of Paul McGann, but now, see, there are huge gaps in my Doctor Who knowledge, and again, I bow my head in shame. Because I sort of picked up with my daughter when I believe it was the 9th or the 10th Doctor, it was Christopher Eccleston. And I hadn't seen it before then, because I wasn't necessarily a science fiction or futuristic sort of TV watcher. I was just really trying to get better at writing songs. I don't think I even had a TV for a long time. But so there are huge gaps. So we didn't join in until... what, 2006 was it?
And 2005.
So I missed the 80s, I missed the 90s, I missed all of that. And I'm really kind of a quidiot in terms of knowing, but I kind of wish that Paul McGann had been a doctor on television, on the series.
For a long series version, of course. Well, we'll come back to that, Pamela. We'll find out a bit more. Let's turn to Jessica Burtis, you wouldn't have been even born, Jessica, when this movie was actually released to the world. So it's the first time you've actually caught it. You've looked at it a couple of weeks ago. Jessica, your thoughts on Doctor Who, the movie, please.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed it. This is the oldest piece of Doctor Who that I've actually seen. I've mostly watched Tennant and Matt Smith as the Doctor. So it was interesting kind of going back to a movie that was before my time to kind of see this iteration of the Doctor. And I agree that I wish that Paul McGann, as I used to say his name, I wish he had been on the show more, because that would have just, I would have watched the seasons with him, because he seemed like such an interesting doctor. I would have loved to have seen that. And I loved his outfit too. I thought his outfit was so perfectly done for his character. I really enjoyed the movie. I thought it was really fun. And I think it'd be fun to watch around like New Year's time and like Christmas. I think it'd be very, like a very perfect time to watch it. I had a lot of fun with the characters too. I wish like more had been able to reappear later, because I'm sad that this is like the only time we really get to see like a lot of the his friends in this movie. So I just thought it was a ton of fun.
A ton of fun. That's great. Okay. Jenny, let's turn to your good self, who, rather like Matthew and myself, were probably around for earlier Doctor Who incarnations and possibly even remembered Sylvester McCoy. So we made that connection with respect to the transference. What were your thoughts, Jenny?
I think it has come up before when we've done other episodes. I've never, ever been a big Doctor Who fan. And I was thinking, oh, a Doctor Who movie. But actually, I was so pleasantly surprised. I agree that Paul McGann, I thought he was great. What I really liked about, I actually thought it was a great film. I sort of forgot that it was a Doctor Who film. And I just thought that the whole, the everyone that had the lead characters, I thought they were so very well cast. And I liked the pace of it. I thought the dialogue was not corny. It was smartly done. And I liked the way the scenes cut, where you had like when the boy was looking through the doctor's things, and then you had someone else that was looking through, where they made a lot of parallels in the scenes, and the way they cut it, I thought it was really well done, that it worked very effectively. I actually really did think it was just a very good film, regardless of whether it was a Doctor Who or not.
Thank you. It's a strange film because it was a standalone thing. It was a backdoor, it's what's called a backdoor pilot. And the show had been dead. BBC just didn't want to do the show at all. And so the show had been dead for a while. And then they came to me, and they'd been trying to get it off the ground as a series at Universal through Amblin. And finally, Spielberg had gone, no, he didn't want to do it. So they then went to Fox to do what is like a TV feature film that would serve as a backdoor pilot, i.e. if it did well, then Universal would pick it up and start to make it as a series. So they gave us about 5-6 million to make it, which is a substantial budget. And I was brought in fairly late in the day, because they'd thrown out all the scripts, and they'd all been written by American or resident writers at Universal. And I just basically came in with a pitch, which was Doctor Who Am I, which is he loses his memory and he has to find out who he is in order to save the world. And I thought that would be a great way of introducing the Doctor to an American public that really, for the most part, didn't know him. So that was the idea. And then that got commissioned very quickly. And then we actually went into production quite quickly. Paul had always been on the cards as a Doctor, even when they were thinking of it as a TV show. So he'd already auditioned. But obviously the other characters like Grace and Yiji's character, they were very much in from my script. So I mean, one of the reasons you don't see it so much as a film is because it was caught in a sort of copyright nightmare, because what happened was Universal decided they didn't want to pick it up. They had a show called Sliders, which was also about time travel, which they understood. They didn't really understand Doctor Who. And because it hadn't completely swept away all the ratings and things like that, Universal basically said, we're going to carry on with Sliders. And so as a result, Doctor Who wasn't picked up. Paul's Doctor stayed alive on Big Finish. A couple of years later, Big Finish came in and started doing radio dramas. So he stayed alive right up to the present day, in fact, in another dimension, if you like. And you can listen to his adventures on Big Finish, which are fantastic. And then he was brought back briefly in 2013 for the 50th anniversary on a web episode which was directed and written by Moffat, where he gets killed and he regenerates as the War Doctor, Hertz Doctor, which was beautiful, which is a beautiful Doctor. So very interesting. So you can see that he's both the shortest and the longest living Doctor in many ways.
You mentioned Universal, of course, Matthew. I mean, one of the things that I appreciated at the time, and do so even more looking at it, as I've done over the months, etc., is the homage to classic Universal horror, the Frankenstein incarnations, the resurrection motif, the elements that we actually see there of the horror aspects of the whole thing, which again very much round off the movie. And although it was shot in Canada, using I believe some of the sets on the X-Files, so it was nice to see that was put together. I think the balance and the essence of what we were doing worked really well, and what you were putting together also addressed the whole essence of the Eye of Harmony, the Jelly Babies. For Doctor Who fans, and I appreciate at the time. And I know we've spoken about this. Thankfully, social media was around, because there was a lot of concern about the Doctor can't be half human. But I think the way in which you developed the Eye of Harmony and issues related to that did actually work very positively. I thought that was nice. One little final point I just want to raise before we start sharing with the team other views on characters and such like. I loved one of the IMDb comments, which had actually compared this to Star Trek for The Voyage Home, both set in San Francisco, both dealing with time, except one has whales, the other doesn't, the one has our arch enemy, the other doesn't, and so on, which I thought was a nice thing. I mean, from your own influences, were you a Doctor Who fan from your own perspective?
Well, I was. I mean, my connection with Doctor Who went right back to when I was like 10 years old and my dad was in The Gunfighters, which was a story that was with the first Doctor, which was filmed in 1966. So my first experience or my first exposure to a TV studio was in fact being taken on my 10th birthday to watch the filming of that. So I had this connection going right the way back. And obviously I'd been doing things like, Young Indiana Jones and Lassie and lots of American animation stuff. And so when this opportunity came along, I leapt at it, really. And it was just lovely to, it's like a dream come true to be able to sort of bring back a character that you love and invest your own kind of spirit into that character. There are parts of Paul's Doctor that are very much the way I see life, and I think any writer brings a part of themselves to the whatever reincarnation of the Doctor whenever they get the opportunity to write the Doctor. They do that because one of the fantastic things about Doctor Who is that there was no Bible. Mostly on a TV shows you're given a Bible, a set of rules, and the way Doctor Who was conceived in the 60s was that there would be no, in the 70s, there would be no Bible. So writers were free to do what they wanted with the character. And therefore it attracted interesting writers like Douglas Adams and, and Terry Nation. They were very interesting writers. And the BBC actually didn't, because the BBC didn't spend much money on it, they never actually bought the rights to whatever the writers would do. They would just basically pay for a broadcast and then a repeat and something like that. So Terry Nation ended up owning the Daleks, and so all the trademarks for what they were done. So that sort of approach was sort of carried on with Universal, really, because Universal didn't, they retained the rights on all the ancillary characters that were in my show. And so as a result, Daphne's character hasn't been able, or brought back briefly, I think, by Big Finish recently. I think they've recently solved the problem. But her character was a wonderful character. Grace Holloway is a lovely character. She's an echo of Doc Holliday for me. And so she has this kind of, 1940s like feel to her. You know, she's smart. Kind of responses.
And the sequence of her in slow motion running through the hospital corridors to answer the emergency call to actually break off the piece from Carmen. I have to say, I thought Brian Very impatient. I mean, I think she was well rid of Brian, actually. I mean, you know, she has to leave to go to the hospital for one call, and then suddenly he basically not only decides to end the relationship, he takes all the furniture out of the house as well. I mean, that's outrageous.
Such a wanker.
Well, there you go. So life is wasted on the living, as indeed classic live reveal yourself, Matthew. Jessica, let's turn to your good self and in terms of characters, because of course we haven't even spoken about as yet Eric Roberts as the Master and other elements, but share with us your own thoughts on this whole thing.
I think, like, I loved that each character was so individual, and I liked that a lot of their morality was very different. Like, Chang Li's morality was very gray in a lot of parts. I know he was, like, under the Master's influence, but even before, it was, like, he's clearly involved in stuff, and I liked that he wasn't this, like, perfect character, you know? He was, like, he had some stuff happening, but he still ended up helping the Doctor, and I really liked his character for that. I liked that he was a bit of trouble. It made him very fun and very interesting. But I also just think that this Doctor was like, he just felt so special the way that he was characterized. And it makes me want to see more iterations like him, or like any way that I can access more content with like this Doctor. And it just, this is like what the Doctor should feel like to me. Like, that's him.
Has he actually replaced Christopher Eccleston, Matt Smith, and indeed David Tennant in your thoughts of who really represents the Doctor?
For me, I think so, honestly, because I don't know, she just feels like magical in some way. It just feels very special. And it's very hard to for me to like some character better than Tennant or Matt Smith's Doctor. Like, those are very, very cool Doctors. So this is like really big.
That's, I think, a testament, basically, Matthew, to not only the power of Paul McGann's performance, but the fact that, because most people say their Doctor is the Doctor they grew up with, so mine would probably be Patrick Troughton, yours might be William Hartnell, John Pertwee for others, some Tom Baker. But I think, actually, the fact that even now, as I say, over a quarter of a century after it was actually made, Paul McGann still actually has that literal resonance, so that a new viewer can actually say, this is a fantastic Doctor.
It certainly is. I mean, he's still, he does a lot of conventions in America, and they always sell out, and people come and they want to hear him. And I think it's, and he's such a great actor, though. He can make the silliest lines sound like they make sense. There would be a couple of times when he would turn to Jeffrey Sachs, who was directing, especially that scene where he slowly realizes who he is and got all this information about the Eye of Harmony, and he said to Jeffrey, what does this mean? And Jeffrey was saying, I don't know. Look, we should ask Matthew what this means. And then they asked me, and I said, I'm not quite sure. I just made it up. And they said, I said, just say it very quickly, and then it'll be like one of those movies, you know, where if you say something fast enough, then nobody will worry. It does make kind of sense. It really does. But really, what is a temporal orbit and things like this? You know, I mean, you have to just realize it's that the audience will suspend their disbelief if they believe in the characters. And this is something. And I'm especially glad that you pointed out Chang Li's character, Yiji's character, because he was the one who suffered from the editing. There was much more about it and his life in the Chinatown and all the people around him. There was more about that, which allowed us to suspend our disbelief as he develops that relationship with the Master. And so for the fans, for the sort of more picky fans, they go, how did the Master get into the TARDIS before Chang Li? You know, they go, how did that happen? And I always kick myself inside and say, well, if we'd had more time invested in Chang Li, we would have suspended our disbelief and just gone, yeah, the Master could get, listen, he came out through the keyhole. Do you know what I mean? There's no reason. So to a degree, there's a sense of fun which I think later incarnations. No, I think they're there. I think that I actually think the show has gone from strength to strength. I think, and I'm glad it wasn't really picked up in America. It would have been a different animal. I'm glad it stayed in Britain. I think at the end of the day, you know, fate will out, as it were.
And yet again, some wonderful editing decisions and choices. I mean, the shards of glass in the resurrection sequence, the fact that we go from the Eye of Harmony through to the fish eye in the Chinese scene, lots of wonderful cuts and edits.
That's Jeffrey. You know, I mean, it was a very visual script, but Jeffrey is a great director. He's really fantastic. And,
Pamela, as I say, fresh in your mind in terms of the sequence, now you had a chance to percolate further. Any thoughts on yourself as far as characterizations are concerned?
There's so much. There's been so much. And I feel like this is, I've kind of gotten over my moment of feeling like an idiot now. And I think that I was just so blown away by Paul McGann. I'd seen him in With Nell and I. My partner is Irish and he loves comedy and, you know, loves, you know, Spike Milligan and like the absurd surrealists and all of this. And With Nell and I was a cult film that he forced me to watch when we first met. And it really, he struck me in that film, and I hadn't really seen him or known that I'd seen him, because I really did miss chunks of television and film in my life because I was just trying to be a pure songwriter, which is kind of silly because you really need to absorb things. So I'm playing catch up. But Paul, because I had seen him in that film, and especially, I mean, he wasn't the insane one there, but still his range. And I've since done a lot more research about him. But the thing about a doctor to me that is, and my daughter and I have had long dinner conversations about this very thing, was that the doctor has to contain madness. They have to seem mad, and even the maniacal laugh, you know, changing vocal registers and just going to those places, which I find that, you know, someone like David Tennant does very well, Christopher Eccleston, of course, you know, and others, of course, but that he really stole it for me. I mean, really, I was watching him the whole time, and his range, and just thinking about how incredibly much I love him. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but he really absolutely stole it from me, so that I was just really thinking of how he was such a great doctor and how I wanted him to be the doctor on television. And so now there's so much work I have to do and homework on this. So as far as characters go, that's, yeah.
Well, you can do the music as well, Palmer. We know that that's all good and particularly important. Jenny, let's turn to your good self. Any characters for you that stood out? I mean, I thought the security guard who was basically not going to allow Dr. Holloway or indeed the doctor to actually pass in any way, shape or form was a classic Jobsworth character that could have been taken out at any particular area, which is wonderful.
One of my favourite bits was the bit where everyone was celebrating the new year and there was a quick clip of him and he was still in exactly the same pub. But there was all little tiny things that I think really made the film. I think one of the things about the Doctor Who, I think that he managed to portray the Doctor as very kind of pure of heart and very innocent. You know, he had that real innocent, like a child, where everybody that he came to, he just, you know, was kind of loving towards them, very, very much like a child, very pure. And I did like the, Chang Li?
Yes.
But I liked that character. I liked that character very much. And I also felt that, I mean, he was the actor himself, who obviously I don't know who the actor is, was you playing with three other well-known actors who were playing quite over-the-top roles. And yet he managed to not allow himself to be lost in those. He didn't have to play an over-the-top role, but I thought he played his role, you know, his humour, the way he delivered the dialogue. He did it, you know, right on cue, that I think made his character still stand out amongst these sort of really big characters. So I think he was my favourite character. He was quite cute too.
He'd be really glad to hear that. I know.
I'm glad to say that.
So hats off to Yi Ji Tzu for his incarnation of Chang Li, which certainly seems to be capturing the whole system. Of course, Eric Roberts as the master and, of course, Bruce, the ambulance driver, is somebody else who, again, probably known because of his fairly famous sister, who is going, I think, ballistic at this time with Julia Roberts and various other sort of things there. I mean, how did you feel Eric kind of, I mean, was he somebody you had in mind as the master? Because there were some very impressive characters that were possibly up for this particular role, Matthew.
We had to cast it's a simple thing with TV movies, and certainly with American films at that time, certain stars would have a rating as a value, and if you're putting something out as a you know movie on a Fox and on Fox Network, they needed somebody who they knew that would have a certain value in terms of sales. And at that time, and I think he still does, Eric attracts a certain audience. And he's great because he actually understood the Doctor, because he did his acting training at RADA in London. And so he was brought up, if you like, through acting. And so he relished the whole kind of, I always dress for the occasion kind of moment, you know, and he was, which was very pantomime like, and is very, it's just how, you know, are they gonna, he just really sort of went for it. And certainly lines like, you know, life is wasted on the living, he totally got in terms of, you know, its reference to the Oscar Wilde line, you know, youth is wasted on the young. He just enjoyed the sort of campiness of it all. And it was quite funny because, you know, I wrote a very campy role. I unashamedly did that. But at that time, the BBC was all into, you know, one line bits of dialogue, everybody speaking very briefly and things like that. So as it went through the development, he'd signed on. And then as it went through the development process, I've reduced his lines so that it became more like the little exchanges that you see with Yuji, where, you know, oh, he did terrible things, yes way, no way, you know, fun stuff like that. And then he turned up on the set and said, where are my big speeches gone? You know, where are they going? So I then had to double back. So there was constantly, in the making of this TV movie, there was constantly this weird kind of, which is why I got a co-producer credit, really, this weird kind of balancing of too many cooks. So there would be the BBC, there would be Universal, there would be Philip Siegel, and, you know, the mountains of Amblin, and then there would be Fox, and of course then there was still a fan contingent, and which they referred to Lefossiere and people like that, who were writing books about the production. So it's a strange world, the world of Doctor Who, but really it's a very warm environment and very much one that spreads across the ages. You know, you go from children who are loving the new Doctors, all the way through to people, you know, like myself in my 60s, who are still you know, it's, I can't think of it. So yes, Star Trek certainly.
Again, in terms of the whole sequence and the writing, it was a childish dream that made you a doctor. You dreamed you could hold back death. Again, the Paul McGann doctor actually referring to Grace in terms of why she was going into medicine in the first place and keeping that child wonderment actually alive, really. The intertextuality, to use a wonderful polysyllabic word, was very much there. We mentioned Frankenstein, of course. We could also say the sword in the stone and the master as almost a Mordred character. And the fact that we obviously had the pulling the sword of the stone to open up the Eye of Harmony. So lots of lovely things there, which I think really addressed and helped enhance the texture of the piece. Jessica, let's turn back to your good self again, because we're pretty much at the stage where we need to provide a score. I know it's trying to quantify the qualitative and so on, but what are you going to go for this particular TV movie?
I think I'm going to give it an 11 because I definitely want to watch it again. And I just have to say that, like, something that just really made it, like, super special for me was the dialogue, like, the writing between the Master and, like, Chang Li and all the characters. The humor, like, just got me. The way that it was written, it just made the movie that much better for me. So I want to watch it again.
So an 11 out of 10 for our North Carolina correspondent, currently based in Trinity College Dublin, doing a master's in children's literature. That's a good connection, really, Matthew. So
thank you so much.
Jenny, you're not a fan, as you said in the past, of Doctor Who, being more of a Gerry Anderson UFO fan and so on.
Jessica has picked up my line of scoring because. And normally things either get minus something or about plus 20. So now Jessica's picked it up as well. Jolly good.
what about yourself then?
I'm going to give it 10 out of 10. I really, really loved the direction. I loved the way the scenes were intercut. I just thought that was really, really classy. And the dialogue, the whole thing, as I say, I just thought, I can't think of anything to fault it. I thought it was a perfect little package and I'll give it 10 out of 10.
It's interesting, when I first watched it, as I say, on a Saturday night in 1996, and I came away thinking, wow, that was really interesting, insofar as clearly one was used to Doctor Who being famous for fairly interesting storylines, but special effects, which, shall we say, could occasionally be a little bit iffy. I mean, from that perspective, and people had to work through that process. And, you know, if I mention things like the Candyman episode with Sylvester McCoy and so on, that there are areas there which didn't maybe quite work. And yet this not only had the slickness of, well, literally Spielberg production, although obviously it wasn't a Spielberg production. He was interested, but he decided to withdraw the whole thing. But it had a slickness, and I really genuinely thought this was going to go to series. Sliders I liked for different reasons, but I was always disappointed, as you said, that Sliders kind of took the essence of what could have been a really cracking series, and in so many ways actually also set the template. If we talk about resonances, I think an awful lot of Russell T. Davis and Stephen Moffat and even possibly Chris Chibnall, their incarnation of Doctor, including the actual design of the TARDIS, which effectively, you know, suddenly moved from what had been a kind of series of rooms into this epic, dimensionally transcendental era, which again were very positively, and that legacy again, Matthew, I think, you know, duly needs to be acknowledged, because it really, at a time where the series, as you said, was pretty much dead in the water after its cancellation in 1987, kept alive via fandom and so on, suddenly kind of re-emerged and actually breathed more life into the legacy.
I think Philip and I were very both concerned that if we went to series, that the TARDIS itself would become a portal to other dimensions. So when you look in the TV movie, you can see that you can go above the console and you can see the universe. You can go off into, you know, the cloister room, which is a cathedral. You know, you can go in. The idea would be that there could be adventures that could happen through the inside, so that we would lose that convention of Doctor Who, which was always the TARDIS breaks down, the TARDIS is somewhere, you know what I mean? They have to leave the TARDIS, they go on an adventure, they come back, they go into the TARDIS, they go somewhere else. So rather than it just being a means of transport, it in itself would become a dimension. And I don't think that's still something that, yeah, maybe they could do. You know, that's something that they could explore that even more if they wanted to.
Special mention as well, given that Pamela's up next, for the music, which manages to work in part of Ron Grainer's theme, etc., but still managed to develop, I think, a wonderful epic sound, which again probably it was only put together when Murray Gold actually took over later scenarios. But in terms of the way in which the music was actually put together, I think that was very impressive. So again, a good movie. So Pamela, what is your score for this particular episode of Doctor, which finally you managed to actually see after all the challenges with respect to that and got there in the end?
Well, I'm giving it a metaphorical 10 because I feel like whenever one does anything frantically, they miss the finer points of things. So I am going to actually insist that Gerry and I, after dinner, watch again. And because I think there's a lot that I missed, but I think it was done incredibly well. I just couldn't take my eyes off of Palm again, and I loved his insanity and yes, his childlike qualities. And I'm really glad that an American company did not pick it up, because my daughter and I, and of course my husband, love British television. In fact, I prefer it. And I just think that Doctor Who is so very British in my mind, you know, and if it had just had to become Americanized and more understandable in this, it would have really lost some of its absolute charm.
Well, not if Matthew had been at the helm, surely. I mean, he would have sort of worked through the whole thing, guaranteed.
No, I don't want to get into it too much, because it's, you know, but the thing is, I'm sure you had to, you know, I'm sure you had to.
Yes, of course, I had to make him more.
Yeah.
The half human thing probably was the most American aspect of what we were doing, because you had to understand why all these adventures were about. He loves humans, you know. They see patterns and things that aren't there. They do things that he just loves that. So it made sense that maybe he was half human. But that's a very American way of looking at it. Spock in Star Trek is half human, and so I think it's good that that didn't really happen, and that it and all things work out for the best in the end. You know what I mean? It's like Eccleston's Doctor was really the kind of Doctor I think that Paul and I wanted him to be. The American influence was very much, let's make him very romantic and Byron-esque. You know what I mean? Paul turned up on the set with his head shaved because he'd just been playing a military role. And then we had to dig a wig out of the local wig store. So that's why it's a very weird, and it was raining all the time, so this wig would look like roadkill on his head.
Which is a whole new world. We will be speaking, Matthew, in the not too distant future about, obviously, Doctor Who Am I, your co-production with, of course, Vanessa Yule, which was a documentary about how things are going. So it's been delightful having you on this particular episode of Resonance Rewind. I can't really let the side down. I've got to go for a 10 out of 10 as well. So just out of interest, Matthew, what would you have actually given this as a score from that perspective?
Well, I'm always kind of self-critical, so I would have kind of given it... But now, in retrospect, I give it a 10 out of 10 because I saw it play recently at Seattle BritCon, and it charmed the audience, and Daphne's swept the film away. You realize that it's the sort of rom-com relationship between the Doctor and Daphne, you know, and that it's when you watch it again, Pam, when you watch it again, look out for that relationship that's there. And it's got that old thing. I didn't even realize it had that quality. But I watched it with Paul McGann a few weeks ago, and we were both kind of swept away by Daphne Ashbrook's skill as a comedian.
Indeed so. And Daphne's also been on our previous midweek drive as well. Matthew Jacobs, writer extraordinaire, Jessica Burtis, Pamela Suman and Jenny Bill. Huge thank yous to all. Next week, we go back to a precursor of the Doctor. We go back to Quatermass and the Pit.
Wow. Oh, fantastic.